This is Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous, the radio program that challenges the anti-aging cultural narrative for women in midlife. Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous is produced at CJSF 90.1 FM, the campus-based community station at Simon Fraser University, which is located on the unceded ancestral homelands of the Squamish, Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Coquitlam peoples. We broadcast a new episode on the second Wednesday of the month between 10 and 11 a.m. I am Robin Erickson, and I talk with women who are aging outside the beauty myth and into their power, honoring their experience and celebrating their strength. This is episode number 5 of Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous, and I'm very excited to have my guest, Rosemary Georgeson, in the studio with me today. Rosemary's passion is in bringing youth, elders, and ancestors together through storytelling and cross-cultural connections. She is a Coast Salish and Saulteaux Dene storyteller, playwright, and filmmaker, and her stories are deeply rooted in her family's long history on Galliano Island. Welcome.
Good morning, Robin.
To the show. How are you doing?
Good. Made it here. So it's all good.
Yeah. I often feel that way too. Somehow the mountain is, it's got its energy, and there's something about getting up to the mountain that always seems like a little bit of a barrier, an obstacle.
It was good that I really enjoyed the drive up here this morning. Coming up into the clouds. And
yeah, it was pretty.
Yeah, it was. It was really pretty.
So, again, thanks for being my guest. We're going to kind of dive into some ideas and some aspects that we might not consider about ourselves being 50-ish. And when I started the program and I named it Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous are definitely three threatening aspects of femininity, of womanliness. But what, each of us have our own sort of superpowers. And I'm wondering if you can identify what three superpowers that you might have that make you a triple threat.
Ah, superpowers. Gee, getting up every morning. Maybe, yeah, just getting up in the morning, because my work takes me in so many different places. I never know where I'm going from one day to the next, what work I'll be doing. Last week I was on stage bringing an Indigenous woman's voice to an old performance piece. So that I was bringing our voices into a place where we'd never been heard before, which it happens a lot in history. Our voices aren't there. So I guess that's one of my big threats to the world is I am 60-ish, First Nations woman, and I have a voice and I love to use it.
Yeah, that's a big threat in this world.
Yeah, I like doing things that don't get me thrown in jail anymore, but I'm kind of a threat to, I can piss off the government in different ways by doing things that they don't want to see happen. I was sharing with you earlier about our family coming together after 122 years. The government and the church tried to stop that from ever happening. Well, too bad. We found each other, and we're a family again after 122 years. So it's simple little things like that. Simple, I say. But those are the kind of threats that I like to be in the world. To do things and undo things that goes against the grain of what things were supposed to be. And putting our voice, our feminist voice, back into the world. I grew up as a commercial fisherman, born and raised into a fishing family. Mom lived on the boat when she was pregnant with me. So in 1956, she was living on the boat. My family has always been on the water. The women in my family, the majority of them were all fishermen. We knew all the women in the community where I grew up were fishermen. So, yeah, that in itself, growing up inside of a man's industry from pretty much the time you were born and living and working through it, you develop some skills.
I can only imagine.
And learning to talk about it, you know, it's... Because it was a completely different kind of life than anything I live today. Mm. It's and growing up on the water, being connected to it that deeply, where it's so entrenched in you that it becomes your identity. It changes, you know. Like when I got older, and I'm not part of it, it's still part of me. I stepped out of the fishing industry. I got caught in a storm and I had two small children, and I had to make a choice of, you know, do I want to stay on the water and the possibilities of not coming back, and leaving my daughters were 3 and 4 at the time when I got caught in that storm, and I couldn't leave my kids. So it was a big decision. The pull of being on the water is still there in me, but the pull of being mom was stronger. Yeah. And I still miss it today. I'm sure you can hear that when I'm speaking.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I think also that there's that difficulty of, you know, making a decision to leave the thing that also supports your family, and what does that look like next?
It was hard. Because when, as growing up as a young woman on the boats and a fisherman, we all knew our place. We took care of our family, and that's how we all supported each other. And all the lessons and all the teachings from when I was growing up on the boats with my dad and my aunties and my grandma sharing stories with me and stuff, those are the things that I still carry today into the work that I do. It's probably a lot of what's led me into the work that I do now.
Mm.
I came into the arts approximately 20 years ago. I did a complete life change, and I stepped into the arts just by fluke. I had no idea what I was getting into when my cousin asked me to come and help her out at a women's writing workshop on the downtown east side. And I'd just been like 3 months into my life change at that time, and I wound up helping her out at the old women's center in the downtown east side. And then the writing workshop moved up to the fire hall, and I had no idea what I was getting into. And my cousin Marie, she likes to tease, and she kind of used to sing, "Well, what do you think of that, Rose?" And of course, you know, I was getting pretty vocal at that time. But in that process of writing, I was writing out stories that I was angry about and giving voice to them. And I didn't even realize that I was angry about some of these stories that I was putting out there. And it started changing how I was moving through this world's biggest hangover in that first year, and letting go of these stories, putting them out on paper. It was just so freeing to let go of it, all this crap that I was packing. And it just kept going. Then we started creating books with the writers group, with the women there. We did a performance piece with them, and it just kept moving forward. About 2 years ago, we launched one of our shows at the Friendship Center, and I'd gotten in contact with an old friend of mine who I'd known back when I was like 14 or so. And first thing he said to me, he goes, "You're living your dream." And I went, "What?" He said, "Well, you always told me you were going to be an artist." I'd completely forgotten that. And there was something in that that has become so empowering, to realize that I'm living my dream to the fullest. And I'm where I planned on being when I was 14, before life got in the way of everything. But I'm there.
Amazing. What a beautiful story. Oh, my goodness. So sort of hopeful and fateful both at the same time, right?
Yeah. You never know what's going to happen. You never know what life's going to give you. Mm-hmm. You know, take advantage of it all.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I love the way that sort of leads me into my curiosity about daring, because so much of what you've already talked about seems daring to me, you know, to be out on a boat and fishing in the wild ocean, and you know, just sort of leaping ship to do this arts thing and really sort of falling into that head over heels. Do you consider yourself daring?
I never thought of it that way. You know, all of the stuff that I've done in my life is because I had to do it. The fishing part I wanted to do. But after I stepped out of fishing, when I got caught in that storm when my kids were young, I wasn't sure what to do with myself. So I wound up driving a truck around the city for a few years, cooking jobs. And I have a background in the culinary arts, kitchen management. So, and my grandmother told me when I was a young girl, if you can cook good, you'll always work. So I kind of worked on that, and I've always worked. I'm never without work. It's always good for a woman to have two or three different backgrounds to keep you afloat when times get kind of short and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But I've never considered myself daring. If I'm on a motorcycle or something and I'm doing 100 miles an hour down the highway, yeah, maybe a little, but I've never thought of it as daring. It's just living. And I love to live. So
yeah, I like the correlation between it's not daring, it's living. Yeah. Because I think that there's some, just energetically, right? There's something that's kind of exciting and ecstatic about daring. When you do things that are daring, it kind of gets your pulse up, and it, yeah, you know, makes you feel a little fiery. In the same way that I think if we're really living life, we have that same spark.
Yeah.
You know, that the spirit is alivened.
Do I have to say, there's days when I miss being on the boat, and I miss that rough weather, that the wind in my face, the water into my face, those dark gray rainy days, and you're just really bouncing around out there, and that edge, there's an edge in that, and maybe that's the daring, and I do look for that. But sometimes stepping into some new unknown territory in the arts, going down a different path, trying new things, that can do that maybe not in the same way that you're fulfilled completely, like being on the water and in those places where I was.
It doesn't strike me quite as life-threatening.
No.
for good, probably.
And I guess I like that threat.
Well, there's nothing quite like, you know, having your life challenged, you know, and those real instincts for survival to be piqued, to make you feel like you've really got to leap off the cliff like Indiana Jones or something. I wish I could come up with a female example there off the top of my head, but
when Nike came out with that saying just do it and it was on their shoes, I fell in love with it. I had to just do it.
Yeah. And so has that become quite a mantra?
Yeah.
For your life?
Yeah. Just do it.
And has it taken you to places where you've been surprised?
Oh, all the time. You know, I've been, you know, I kind of feel like I was just kind of thrown into this arts world without a clue. Before I got into the arts, basically, I wrote a story about being the hockey puck in a winning hockey game. There wasn't much more, because I was always so focused on raising kids and being on the water and just working. So, yeah, it does surprise me all the time when I land in these different places and the work that I do. Sometimes, like I was saying last week, I brought in Indigenous women's voices to an old piece that where we were written out of. And I love that challenge. Like, we were here, you know, and you're going to talk about us, whether you like it or not. And these are the stories, you know, just that we were here and we have a voice.
Mm.
And inserting that into the world wherever I can, bringing it to the work that I do. I work a lot with youth, and working with youth, helping them find that story on their own. Those are the things that give me that edge. Watching women go through workshops that we do and them finding their voice, whether it starts from a low growl to a big roar or just their body is saying, I'm here and deal with it. Those are the edges, yeah.
Yeah. Well, those are daring things to do, right? To find our voice, to express our voice, to be present and not invisible.
Yeah.
That is daring in itself. And in very many contexts where, you know, we've been erased for whatever reasons and contexts. And the more erasure we've had, the more voice we have, the more daring that is.
I love to be daring.
So, yeah. The things that sort of push you outside of your comfort zone, how do you navigate that space? Do you just, like, beyond the just do it?
I think I left my comfort zone in the dust about 20 years ago.
On the boat.
Somewhere. And it's just like moving forward. Everything has got a new challenge to it. It's and I'm always learning more. I have a natural curiosity. I always have since I was very young. And I need to know what's around the next corner. I need to know what's coming next and what it is. And I have to find it myself.
Hmm. We're going to take a song break and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about curiosity next.
Okay.
You brought two songs along to play for us. Do you want to introduce the first song and tell us what we're gonna hear?
It's the Women's Warrior song. To me it's a very powerful song because it's for women to honor us. So many times we're not part of history. We're not part of anything. Our stories are erased, and it's to honor our sisters that aren't here with us anymore, you know, to give them voice and that they're heard too, you know. And that's it's a powerful song and it's important.
The Women's Warrior song here on Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous. My name's Robin, and I am here with my guest, Rosemary Georgeson, who brought that song along to play. And yeah, it just has so much heart to it,
yeah.
You know, with the drumming and the chorus of singing, and
it's something that happens in my heart, you know, the feel, the strength whenever I hear it and I'm at a gathering where it's being sung. I don't, to explain, to talk about why it's important, that's hard for me because it's a feeling.
Mm.
Before it can be put into words for me.
It's interesting what I hear in that song, because the sort of beat is so determined, I guess, is the word. Mm-hmm. Right at the beginning, it's like, are, I'm putting my foot down and it stops like right here. You know, it's the women's warrior song.
Yeah. You know, when you just said that about this is it and putting my foot down, I've had enough. And that is a lot of the feeling that I get, that strength starts rising up in me. And, you know, I know other women will say the same thing. That's it. We're done. We've had enough. Our strength is here.
And it's together.
Yeah, it is.
Right? It's not us as islands.
Yeah.
It's us banding together and singing in unison.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not just one voice anymore. We're one really big voice where we've all come together to share.
Yeah. Yeah. Before the song, you had just started to talk about how curiosity doesn't necessarily get the best of you, but it's definitely something that leads you.
Oh, yeah. Growing up on a small island like Galeana, when I was born there, there was only 250, 300 people maybe, and just about everybody was related to us. So there's not a lot of room for a lot of expansion. So I think I was 12 or 13 when I had to go off island to go to school, and that was just over to Salt Spring. But I've always been in and out. In the last 30 years, I've been more out of Galeano. My family's all still there. But I was always curious. I needed to know, like, this is how we live as island people. How do they live over there in the big city? How do they live over in Vancouver Island? What are people doing on the other side of the world? I just needed to know what was out there. And not... I always knew I had Galeano to go home to when I got tired and I needed to feel renewed. I go home. I go back down to our bay at the south end there. But there's a whole big world out there I've got to know more about and what keeps us moving forward. I part of a workshop where I'm a facilitator, and there's four questions in it, and one of them is, what drives me forward and what takes me back? And those two things are, what drives me forward is my curiosity. And I'm able to afford my curiosity because I have that place to go back to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that struck me when you said that, that it's a partnership.
Yeah.
You know, that ability to sort of be curious and risk is made possible by the haven or the safety, the sanctuary of home, and knowing where and what that means to you.
Yeah. It's home is sometimes it's a word that we don't always really look at inside of us. Like, what is home to us as women? It's not always just a structure with four walls and a roof on it. We've got to find that place where we're home and we feel healthy and we feel nurtured so we can keep doing the work that we do.
Mm. Yeah. Definitely for me, home is much broader than my four walls and my roof and my cat, you know, and my partner. It extends broadly into who is in my community and, you know, whether or not I feel the warmth of the hearth in the broadest sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at with it all. It's when I started doing some workshops with my friend Liv, and we developed the workshops for a show that we were doing, and it was about two women who'd been best of friends all throughout their lives, and one was passing into spirit world, and I'm telling her story as she passes. But it was just looking at what home is, because these two women that had been so close since they were single digits, and they'd been on the streets, they'd been homeless, they're coming to one of them is coming to the end of her time, and they're homeless, and how they took care of each other, and how do you move forward in that, and how do you honor this person who's probably knows you better than you know yourself? So that's my role, is to open up her stories. And it, for me, it wasn't really difficult. It was difficult to go there because the storyline that Rose shares in that is, I had that friend and she's not with us anymore. And she is a big part of what moves me forward on stage through that piece. And Olivia is amazing, and I love her to bits, and she makes it easy for me to move through my story on stage as I'm remembering my friend at the same time, and our stories about home and being young single moms and working for every buck we got to support our kids, and you know, getting sick of fried bologna and all the rest of that crap, and those stories of being two young single moms and trying to keep things together for our families.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we started developing the workshops for home and finding that place where we're connected and find our strength too.
Yeah. Do you find through these workshops that that curiosity rises, and how does that present itself?
Every time I'm in a workshop, there's a few different ones that I do, but they're all in journeys of discovery about ourselves. They're all very personal. And it does, the curiosity, it's, for me, it's sometimes it's how my stories fit in to help bring their stories out. How people find their voices, not my voices, not my facilitation partner's voice, their own voice. And seeing how that transforms with them and what they find, that's the curiosity that comes alive. That's the fire in it for me.
Mm.
And most of the workshops I do are mostly women's workshops. You know, sometimes we have the odd man come through, but you wouldn't know it. In our culture, two-spirited people, there was no gender really. So having men come through the workshops, it was no threat in any way. Beautiful to add that other layer of voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just adds more experience to the mix, right?
It does. And, you know, there's one workshop that I'm part of where it's research into ancestors. So, you know, there's a place throughout the workshop where, you know, you feel like the ancestors are present with you. And some of those ancestors are male, and they bring in a very heavy male energy. And it's welcomed.
Yeah.
And how they share their presence in a way. I guess that's what you call it. It's an arts-based workshop, and it's creating story through our own body and the stories that we carry. And sometimes those stories are led male or female, but it's always such a beautiful journey of discovery, what you find.
Right. Yeah.
And how that voice is going to come out.
Mm-hmm. For both people, I think, on both sides. It happens here at the radio station in a similar sort of way, you know. New people come and get on the microphone and find out what they have to say, and it both fires them up, and it fires their audience up, and it fires the the station staff and all of the other people in the community up, you know. It's kind of a contagion.
I love it. I love it. Settings, you know, starting little fires and see where they go.
Yeah, curiosity is a disruptor.
That's probably why I love it so much.
Are there new things that you seek to understand that are just coming to you now? Like, are there things that you're pointing to where you're like, I really need to know about that particular this or that?
Everything. But to narrow that down a bit, I'd been embarking on a process for a few years with my film partner, and it was a need to know what happened to my grandmother's voices, why they weren't part of history. There's a very loud presence for my old great-great-grandfather in history, and people have said you should be so proud to be his descendant. And I'm going, well, what happened to my grandmothers? Where were they? Why don't they have a voice? Because he couldn't have survived here without them. So those are...
That's, we know that.
Yes. Fully. Those are the things that making, finding them, finding their voices. This process that I've been in for the last couple of years, it was putting their families back together. Because history stopped them from having the ability to do that. Mm-hmm. And they lost their children, grandchildren. And that, I've known the stories all my life, but to find the answers to them. You know, all these stories that I know and have heard, but they never had an ending to them from when I was a kid and growing up through life. I want to know what the ending is. I want to know that they have a good outcome. That history and colonization can't stop the stories from having that. It seems kind of large, but if you make just one little step, one thing can change the outcome of a lot of things. So my natural curiosity is taking me one step at a time to work towards finding the ending to these stories, maybe. But curiosity, it can be a good thing, it can be a bad thing, it can be disruptive, it can be anything you want it to be. But I want it to be, I want it to lead me.
Mm, right.
And I'm 62. It's leading me in all sorts of directions. You know, how do I want to pursue the next 10 years of my life? I want answers to things. I want to know stuff. I want to put things back in place that were taken. And if I have the ability to do that in some way through the work that I do, then I'm going to do it. I'm not hurting anybody. I might be pissing off a few people along the way, but, you know, that's no big deal. We can't have everything perfect all the time.
Well, and if we're not rattling the cage, then change is not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, there has to be a fair amount of making discomfort, you know? And I think curiosity is a part of that making discomfort, mm-hmm. you know? It's seeing the cracks in the pavement, and wondering what's in there. Yeah. What's below that? What's causing that riff, you know? And shining a light on what those sort of shadowy things might be. And that's not easy work.
No, but it's fulfilling. I just love seeing that, how people, what they take away from the work that we do. I was doing this workshop years ago on the East Side, a writing workshop, and I asked people to, you know, through the workshop, they have to write a bit of a story. You can draw it, whatever's easiest for you. And this one person drew a picture of the ruffled sidewalks and a crack in it, but it had this beautiful little tree growing up, and it showed its roots and coming up through the cracks in the sidewalks, that it doesn't matter how tough it is, there's still something beautiful that's going to grow out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just the resilience of being unstoppable.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, there's a lot of power and empowerment about that,
yeah,
too.
And we are unstoppable as women. We might think we might hit a brick wall every once in a while, but there's always something that pulls us over it.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely feel that in my bones a lot of the time.
Yeah,
we just, you know, pick ourselves up and, you know, away we go.
I said the R word a couple years ago, about a year ago. What am I going to do when I retire? And by uttering that R word, my life became so busy that I don't have time to think about it. So I've just kind of tossed it out and I figured, well, if I can do this as long as I can stand upright, then this is what I'll do. And we'll just forget about that R word and we won't talk about it anymore and we'll just keep moving forward.
Right. The other song that you brought for us to play begins and is an R word also. And I think it's a good time to stop and have that as our song break.
Cool.
I don't know that it needs a whole lot of explanation, but I will encourage you out there in the audience to get on your feet and
have a little dance.
Sing along. Yeah. Shake your booty.
Just a little bit.
Aretha Franklin putting a little sizzle in our step. I'm here with my guest, Rosemary Georgeson, and that was a song pick that you brought along, having a little dance party here in the studio. It's good to get the blood going, you know, shake all that stuff off that, you know, doesn't belong there.
It's a good Kickstarter for the day.
We have about, well, a little bit less than 15 minutes in the show. The hour mm-hmm. always goes by quickly when the conversation is rich. And I want to move us along into what your relationship is, I guess, with wisdom, and how that, I know it's, but you know, as elder people, elder women coming into our elderhood, wisdom is one of those things that we're supposed to have, gain, do.
Yeah,
I don't know. And it's this complicated relationship, right? Because sure, we have it, but we also have an understanding about it that is very different than what we imagined it might be.
That whole wisdom thing, it, I don't know if I have it as much as I have lived experience. And I draw on my lived experience. If I'm encountering something or a situation is in front of me, I'll go with what I know. So I don't know if that counts as wisdom or not. It's just, I've already been there, done that, messed it up, and this is what I've learned.
Don't want to do that again.
Yeah, it's your choice if you're going to go there, but I can tell you this, I can share this with you. And taking away from lived experience, what worked, what didn't work, if it messed up, what it needed, what it was lacking, being able to look at it and through all those different eyes, I think maybe that accounts for some wisdom. If I've never used the word, I don't think about it. Like I said, life is one foot in front of the other all the time. And if I've lived it and you need to know something, and I can help you and I can share it, sure. But other than that, I don't think I have a lot of wisdom. Otherwise, I would have been doing this back when I was 14 instead of waiting till I got to my 40s or whatever it was when I embarked on this journey that I'm on. But I had to live life too.
Yeah, which has empowered you to do the work that you do, because now you have this lived experience that allows you to share and understand and appreciate how stories work in our lives, right? I think that there are people in the world who don't reflect on their lived experience. You know, or it's a challenge for them to do it. It's a challenge for me to do it sometimes. Yeah. And so, you know, I can end up making the same mistake a few times in a row before I learn. So it's not something that is necessarily, it doesn't necessarily come easily, you know, that reflection piece. Do you find that your art practice has helped you become more reflective in terms of how your life?
Yeah. It's, like I said, my arts practice, I kind of got thrown into it. I have a couple short playwriting courses behind me. I managed to be where I am now, I guess, by going with what I was taught. I was raised mostly by my grandparents, and you know, my grandmother, she worked until she was like 70, hardest working woman I've ever known. And all she ever, well, she used to tell me, just be the best person you can be, and everything is to learn from. And I guess I brought that with me. You know, it's always been a part of me. So getting me to where I am today, what I do, comes from those words, that place, and how to take care of myself on the water, how to just take care of myself and survive. And this is a whole new world, you know, from there to now. And it's a much safer for me now in this place. And I've got all that experience back there to draw on. I do a lot of community engagement work. And there used to be a time when I was so shy, to step out and speak out was nearly impossible. Now I do community engagement work, so I have to be out there talking to people. I'm sitting here talking to you on a radio, you know, which is a complete flip side for the person I was 30 years ago, 40 years ago. So we all have a voice. We all have to find it at some point, or I hope we all do, and we know how to use it well. Because there's some people that have one, and they don't know how to use it well. So go with what you know.
It strikes me that your grandmother's advice to you was, you know, be the best person that you can be, and learn from what you do. Those are wise words. You know,
I always thought of my grandmother as one of the wisest women I've known. So,
me too. But those are yeah, they strike me as wise words. You know, and things like best practices. Mm-hmm. You know. Things to put in your pouch to sort of carry you through on a good path. You know, to me, that's sort of, you know, those pearls of wisdom. Those are those little nuggets that I can call upon to sort of help me on my way, and to light my path, or to make it easier for me somehow, you know?
Yeah. I just, when you talk about those little pouches of wisdom or words that we carry with us, I think so many of us do carry that as women. In that, I think there comes the things that our parents said to us that we say to our kids, and that our kids are going to say to their kids. And I've had my daughters call me and go, remember what you used to say to us all the time? I just said it to my kids, and I said I was never going to say that. Words of wisdom.
Right, the trickle-down effect.
Yes.
And some of those things are certainly words of wisdom. Some of them maybe not so much. More of a loop tape that just, you know,
plays in their head,
keeps playing in their head. But yeah. Another way that I'm trying myself, anyways, to sort of understand the relationship that I have with wisdom is in my relationship with the collective good versus my own self-interest. Mm-hmm. and how have you noticed that has shifted for you, where the common is maybe more there's more precedent given to that, or?
That's hard to say. You know, I'm, when I'm in a group and it's all younger women and they're waiting for me to speak, you know, a question comes up or something, and they turn to me and wait to see how I'm going to respond to it. My response to that is I'm waiting to see how they're going to respond, because they're going to be the ones that are carrying that. I've already carried it. You know, and if you need my help in finding your voice and how you're going to put things forward in this common ground, I'll help you do that. But, you know, I don't, been there, done that. It's, now it's my turn to help the next generation of women and the generation after that, because I'm working with kids my grandchildren's age. Mm. So it's helping them to find their voice in that common ground and what they want to share.
Right. And that will echo out into the forever.
Yes. It's, I've done my stuff. You know, so it's, but I'll help you find your stuff and whatever that voice might be. It's simple. It's the passing on of all, everything has an evolution to it. And that's where I'm at, is just letting it take its natural evolution and going on to the next generation. And I, like you said, I have granddaughters that are young teens, they're mid-teens, and I want them to have their voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I want them to have the strength. And I want my grandsons to be good men that will respect a woman's voice. So sharing and helping them find their voice and walking in that good path that they feel safe to talk to me about these things or want to know more, or that I can open up a conversation with them that gets them thinking about these things. That's my contribution to the common ground now.
Amazing. Yeah, amazing. And unfortunately, where we have to stop our conversation. It has been an absolute pleasure, Rosemary Georgeson, to have you on the show. I'll give you a breath to say how people can find more about you and contact you if that's something that they're interested in knowing, you know, about your workshops, or how do people find you?
How do people find me? RosemaryGeorgeson@wordpress.com.
Perfect.
And I'll update my website for you.
I will also post that as a link to the audio archive of this show when it goes up on the website, so that people can just click on the hot link and that'll make it easy for them. So great. Again, thank you so much. This has been Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous. You can connect with me at Aging with Imagination on Facebook, where you'll find links to the audio archive of this show. And you can also find them at cgsf.ca under the program schedule, Intervene Us by Date. I'm Robin Erickson. I've been your host. See you next month when we continue to challenge the conversation about aging for women in midlife.